Prof, so we can cross to you a little early, which I'm very grateful for, because although you have certain topics in mind, there are two questions that I have been chomping on the bit to ask you for quite a while. So if I just must start with that. Prof, are a professor of virology. If anybody knows what we are going through or faced with, it's you. That is for sure. So my question to you is, was this foreseeable in any way?
No, not at all. You know, it's interesting because, you know, coronaviruses, I've been lecturing to students for many decades, and the human coronavirus, we kind of just brushed over in a, I think less than a minute. The human coronavirus really were responsible just for a small proportion, a trivial proportion of the common cold. In 2003, we had the first SARS, but that didn't affect us, which is, you know, in the other side of the world. And then in 2013, the MERS again didn't really affect us. So this really came totally out of the blue, unexpected, unpredicted.
It's just interesting to me because there is so much contradictory information out there. I think a word I read was zootonic or something like that, that we, as human beings, as a species, we've expanded, we're encroaching on the natural habitat of animals, and this was bound to happen. You don't buy into that.
No, I do. I do, certainly. It's actually called a zoonosis.
Zoonosis.
Yeah. Yes. In other words, where infectious agents, and mainly viruses, I guess, come from the animal kingdom, cross what we call the species barrier, and then by mutation, they adapt to the human organism. So this SARS coronavirus 2, the one causing COVID-19, this has now really become entrenched in the human population. This is now going to be one of our human viruses and probably will be an annual visitor, like you have an annual visit from influenza. We have an annual visit from SARS-CoV-2 as well, one of the causes of respiratory infection. And hopefully in the years to come, of course, the population will build up a certain degree of immunity. But this year, unfortunately, the human population is totally susceptible. So that's why it's spreading like wildfire.
Do you foresee in the future that there would be a vaccination, as one would get a normal flu jab, one would get one for COVID-19 as well?
Yes, hopefully we will. You know, that in fact, there are vaccine trials now, the preliminary vaccine trials, what we call phase one trials, which have already started in the United States. There are, I think, three vaccine candidates which are being evaluated. The problem is that, you know, it takes a long time. They have to go through a whole series of tests, what we call phase one, phase two, phase three. They also have to be tissue culture tests, got to be animal tests. So this takes probably about a year. So we really can't see a vaccine becoming available until well into next year.
Yeah. And then perhaps this says more about my mindset more than anything else, but do you think those who are making the decisions have an exit strategy sitting in the top drawer somewhere? Do they know how they're going to get us out of this?
That, of course, is a $64,000 euro pound sterling question. No, I think the answer is no. And the reason is because – well, actually, what I wanted to actually talk about, in fact, is a serious warning to the community that we're really only in the very early stages of this epidemic in this country. And in fact, worldwide, it's fairly new. You know, we've only had this epidemic really since the beginning of the year. We're only into April now. But certainly in South Africa, we're at the very beginning of the epidemic. So an exit strategy for South Africa, well, I don't think it's still pretty much. We've still got the worst to come, in fact. You know, it's a problem because, you know, people I think are being, misled by the figures that are coming out. They seem to be fairly small. You know, we know what 1,600 odd cases and 12 deaths. Yeah. So it looks quite small. And in fact, it's only 31, which I say only, there were 31 cases lost yesterday. And I think 20 something a day before. So it seems to be kind of slowing down, but that's totally incorrect. It's not true at all. I think the slowdown is partially artifactual because there's a big backlog in testing. And also the thing is that the actual trajectory, that curve, is still steeply climbing. And it might zigzag a bit. It might drop a little bit. But then I think we're going to have a steep increase pretty soon. And as I said before, the worst is still to come. And I think that's actually what worries me. if I might, Simon, just go on to
sobering, say. But we've got to speak the truth.
I really want to give a very serious warning, a serious warning to the community, and that's not to be complacent and not to be misled either by the, you know, the morsels which are thrown out by the media that there may be a treatment. There isn't. There's no effective treatment, or that a vaccine soon to come available. It's not. Only sometime next year. And also not to be misled by these statistics, because we are not certainly slowing down. We are in the upward trajectory of that curve. And as I said before, still worse to come. And the reason I'm saying that is that I'm seeing now that people are, I think, relaxing their guard a bit. You know, you go to the shopping centers. Well, I haven't been to shopping, but I've just reported back to me that there are people congregating, socializing. I see now outside the streets that, in fact, the cars are, I think, probably close to the normal volume with people chatting away. And I really, you know, it's a serious warning on the Erev Pesach. I know Erev Pesach is Chag Sameach, but, you know, I think that the community must really kind of not be too complacent and definitely not to relax prematurely. I think that could be disastrous. What we really want to avoid, and I think we must compliment the government because they have been timeless in the intervention, but we want to avoid an explosive epidemic like happened in Italy. And the problem is if we relax our guard too soon, we could be heading that way. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. But I think it's important that the community be aware of it.
So, Prophet, the risk of repeating ourselves, I mean, it is Passover tomorrow night. It's a majorly important Jewish festival, a festival where people feel driven to celebrate as a community because it's all about the we. It's about becoming a nation. It's us. It's never I. You're going to repeat the warning yesterday that you gave. Stay at home.
Well, you are stay at home. You know, I can only give the medical advice, and the medical advice is pretty clear. Pretty clear, maybe harsh, but pretty clear. And that's we need to protect our elderly. Our elderly, I know it's going to be tough for them to be on their own. My wife and I on our own. And, you know, I think it's really in the interest of their health, the interest of other people's health, that we don't facilitate the spread, and particularly to those who may be vulnerable, who if they do get infected are going to get severe complications. So keep them away from the Saturday. Try and, you know, people probably are not going to listen. If they don't listen and they do carry on and have me, then please to kind of be so meticulous in the social distancing. But preferably, the elderly should not be at the seders.
I think that is very, very important advice. It's more than important advice. It could be the difference between life and death advice at this point in time. I mean, my goodness me, you would have thought somebody like Boris Johnson would have probably been so well protected from catching this virus. And yet, look at him. He's sitting in intensive care in some hospital in London. I mean, it knows no boundaries. Yeah. Prof, thank you for the input over the past couple of days, a few weeks, actually. Chag Sameach to you and your family.
Can I have 1 minute just to thank?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much. I wanted to thank you, Simon, personally. It's been such a pleasure being interviewed by you. I also want to thank Senna, who I know is one of the producers. Thank Chai FM for all you do to the community. I also want to thank the Chief Rabbi and the Rabbonim and the Beth Din for all that they've done for the community. I want to thank the Board of Deputies who really came very forcefully and energetically to the party, and thank Zev, the Vice President of the Board of Deputy. He's a real powerhouse. Thank Wendy Carr, the National Director. You know, I've known Wendy since she was born, literally.
I believe that is the case, yes.
And that energy, that dedication is absolutely amazing. I also want to thank my co-medical advisor, Dr. Richard Friedland, for his wisdom and his insights. He's also been a tremendous help as well. And lastly, but not leastly, I've got to thank my dear wife, who's kind of stood by me, has helped, done the videos, et cetera, et cetera. Not easy. And also to wish the whole community, thanks to the community, and wish everybody a Chag Pesach Sameach v'Kasher.